Good morning, everyone. Sunday, April 12th, 2015. Our subject today is, Are Sin, Disease, and Death Real? And we had a really lively Bible study yesterday. I thought perhaps that would be enough, but there's so much to this lesson, so we are going to get into this to the lesson again today. So, and then if we have time, we'll go back to the questions and answers, finish up there. Okay, so who would like to read the golden text and responsive reading for us?
I will.
Thank you. Go ahead, please.
Okay, golden text from Exodus. I am the Lord that healeth thee. And Psalms. Because thou hast made the Lord, which is my refuge, even the Most High, thy habitation, there shall no evil befall thee, neither shall any plague come nigh thy dwelling. For he shall give his angels charge over thee, to keep thee in all thy ways. The righteous shall flourish like the palm tree, he shall grow like a cedar in Lebanon. Those that be planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of our God. They shall still bring forth fruit in old age. They shall be fat and flourishing. To show that the Lord is upright, he is my rock, and there is no unrighteousness in him.
Thank you. So, who would like to comment on that? What does that do for you?
Well, I heard the word flourish many times. And I know it helped me throughout the week when I read that, just to place myself in God's care and know that his plan for everyone is that they flourish. But the reason that they flourish is to show that the Lord is upright, not a personal sense of things. It's just the divine plan for all of his creation.
Thank you. Is Sana here? Can anyone bring up the forum? Her, she wrote about the palm tree. It was beautiful. That section certainly is handling age, about the palm tree flourishing. Does anyone have it?
Either? I have it.
Okay, go ahead, please.
The righteous shall flourish like the palm tree. Bond's commentary beautifully illustrates this. The palm grows slowly but steadily from century to century, uninfluenced by those alternations of the seasons which affect other trees. It does not rejoice overmuch in winter's copious rain, nor does it droop under the drought and the burning sun of summer. Neither heavy weights, which people place upon its head, nor the importunate urgency of the wind can sway it aside from perfect uprightness. There it stands, looking calmly down upon the world below, impatiently yielding its large clusters of golden fruit from generation to generation. They bring forth fruit in old age. Solomon covered all the walls of the Holy of Holies round about with palm trees. They were thus planted, as it were, within the very house of the Lord. In their presence, there was not only ornamental, but appropriate and highly suggestive, the very best emblem, not only of patience in well-doing, but of the rewards of the righteous, a fat and flourishing old age, a peaceful end, a glorious immortality.
Thank you. That is how you should think of yourselves, like a palm tree. If you're grounded and rooted in the love of God, you should think of yourself that way, never fading, never growing old, continuing to flourish all the days of your life, as Mrs. Eddy did, as others certainly have done. And it's something to think about, whatever your so-called current age is now, You know, we were taught here to start very early on to know I'm ageless, diseaseless, and deathless because God made me so. It's important to be handling this because what is mortal mind saying? Each year makes you older.
Yes.
Going down.
Yes.
It's constantly advertising old age. They try to keep it right up front and in your face. And that's what you have to work and know better. We are ageless.
Ageless. Mm-hmm. Right. Never record ages. Don't think about it. The less you think about it, the better off it is. But it's something to be handled because it is out there in your face all the time. Not the truth. That's a beautiful description of the palm tree and what it is. And we should think of ourselves that way as well.
So what does it mean to make the Lord your habitation? Because that's the premise for all of this comforting stuff.
The psalm says, "He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High," and that dwelling is your habitation in spirit, in God.
Thank you.
Yeah, your habitation is where you live.
Yeah. So if you live.
And how? And what is the basis of my life? Is it eating and drinking and getting up in the morning and going to work? Or is it doing God's will?
Doing God's will.
Yes. And make sure that's why we start our day with knowing God is our life. A very important premise to begin with. Not only our life, our mind, our all. Yeah, and that certainly enables us to flourish as the palm tree. And Florence referred to that 91st Psalm, and I know those of you who work with me, I've really asked you all to memorize that Psalm. You know, that Psalm would do more for you than any security system would do. Mm-hmm. Total peace and security, dwelling in that secret place of the Most High. It is an amazing and complete treatment. And I've read to you where Mrs. Eddy says it's something that she works with often, perhaps daily, that and the Sermon on the Mount and the First Commandment. There's no better thing to work with. Keep it simple. So, and all of this makes you conducive. It makes it conducive for healing to take place, knowing these truths, comfort. Anyone else on this?
Well, Science and Health does say that God maintains and sustains what He has created. So this is really in line with this. If we're thinking that way, that He has He is our life, then of course it is sustained and maintained and protected, in fact. It's safe.
Yeah, and when we make the Lord our habitation, when we have no desire other than to follow what God has for us, then we put ourselves under His law, under the law. But if we fail to do that, what happens?
Chaos. A mess.
Yeah, chaos,
the
mess.
Yeah, you've got no protection. You've got in belief.
Yeah, you've wandered out into the Adam dream, and then you're under all these mortal laws, so-called mortal laws, and you get buffeted all around, and it's really not a lot of fun. So stay dwelling in that secret place of the Most High. Sometimes it does. It takes an effort. You've got to work at it a little bit, but well worth that effort. And it doesn't mean that everything is suddenly all perfect and nice and cozy either. You will have things come up, problems to come up, but you'll know how to meet them with the power of omnipotent God.
who keeps his angels charge over us.
Yes.
Yeah, and I would say it's rarely ever cozy, because you've enlisted in the army, in God's army, when you put him first. And but you have a peace of mind and a sense of dominion that you can't ever get any other way. And when problems come to you, you have what you need to overcome them, as opposed to being a victim.
I think that sense of dominion is so important, because otherwise it's this helplessness, and I just remember how terrible I used to feel, and I've said this many times. I say it again because sometimes I can't believe, and I'm just grateful for the strength that just living daily, humbly listening and knowing that my life is in God, the peace that has given me. It's also given the dominion that even things come up, I don't feel as helpless anymore. I know what to do in order to gain that strength and to know that, no, God is right here now. It took some time, but I don't know where I'll be without it.
So good, Florence. Yes. I think we've all felt that way from time to time.
And that's what takes away the panic as well, which is the testimony that Florence gave last week. Because I feel that all the time, no matter what, any situation that comes up, whether it be a question or something that seems like such a huge problem, I can always ask, Father, what do you want me to do? Father, what do you want me to know? And starting my day with talking to him, this helps me to continue it through the day, and that's what's been such a great help for me since I've come to Plainfield. So thank you for that teaching.
And we should look forward to the challenges, because they bring us closer to God.
They do, yes. Thank you. And you know, Day-Day said when something would come up, she would say, Father. And that's what we should say, Father. Instead of pressing the panic button, say, Father. We have this Father. A loving Father right there with us to help us. And see how many times. It's a good indication, because we can be praying and working in the morning, but then something comes up in the day. Do you panic? As Florence's testimony was about. That was a great thought. Are you panicking, or are you keeping your dominion and knowing Father will be there and the Father will help you with whatever it is. And I think living in God, every thought that comes to you, take it back to God. God, what are you saying? What am I saying? If you see an accident, there are no accidents in divine mind. I think that's living in God. It is. Being so instant in truth, error is always too late, as Mrs. Eddy says. Anyone else? I did want to mention, too, thank you all. Your contributions on the forum this week were wonderful, and appreciate them. And, yeah, Florence has said, just some simple idea. You never know what will help someone else. If it's helped you, it will help someone else. So don't be shy. This isn't an intellectual thing where we're trying to show everyone how much we know, or how many quotes, or what we've proven. No, never. This is just heart speaking to heart, sharing what you've proven and what you've loved or what's true to you, and that will reach another's heart. So I'd like to get into just a little bit more with a story about the blind man. We covered it very well, but there were just a few more points. That the disciples asking him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And Luann, you're here, right?
Yes.
Okay, well, you speak to this, Luann. You wrote me something, you know, that was very good, I thought. So,
what
about blame.
Huh?
About blaming.
What I wrote on the forum?
Yeah, maybe it was the forum. Yes, it was the forum. Go ahead, speak to that.
Well, I was just saying that, you know, how many years have I spent just blaming everything for the condition that I was in? You know, I was blaming things on my parents, and once I stopped blaming them, then I was able to forgive, and when I forgave, then I did begin to flourish. Things changed in my life, and it dropped off all that pain and suffering that I was having. That when we blame, we separate ourselves from God, because we're putting the power into the hands of something else.
Very good.
Excellent. That's good metaphysics. That's exactly right. You're saying that there's some other power apart from God, and you're believing in it, and to a degree you're worshiping in it. You're saying it's affected your life, and that's where you are the helpless victim. The dominion is within.
I kind of was thinking, too, that it's pretty incredible the amount of power that we give away or don't utilize that we have from God when we blame others for the wrongs in our lives or expect other people to make our lives better for us. We sit helplessly when we don't use that power that we're giving. And the amount of power that we have that's restored to us, when we realize that, when we stop blaming and stop depending on other people, that it's an incredible amount of power.
Yes, that's wonderful, Luann. It is so true, and I know all of you listening know that to be true. But think about it. Do you give everything to someone else, even your happiness? Here's your sense of well-being. Is that in someone else's hands, whether they approve of you or not? You have health problems because you think they were inherited, or because someone was mean to you, or there was some accident in your past. What power are you giving away? Where are you seeing a power apart from God? That's what animal magnetism is, my friends. It's believing in a power apart from God. So be aware of this. Don't give it any power to anything but the one and only who has all power.
That was very helpful what you said, Luann. And one thing that you said that struck me was that, you know, people tend to expect other people to make their own lives better for them. And it's a sentiment that I think is pretty prevalent in society, whereas the need is to turn to God and find your dominion there, and not in somebody else doing something for you. So it's a very helpful statement.
We each individually have that power. It's not one person has more power than the other, so you need to help me. We each individually have that power.
It's derived in God, and God loves us all equally. He has no favorites.
Right, and that's exactly why the most important thing we can do is to cultivate our personal relationship with God and not lean on any person or lean on any organization or lean on anything, but strengthen that relationship that you have with God.
Yeah. I think as Mrs. Eddy has said, that divine love is universal and impartial in its adaptations and bestowals. Well, there you have it.
Yes, there you have it. And that's why you see people, as such as Luann, rising out of the worst conditions. There are others who've never even heard of Christian Science. You've heard about them coming out of just ghetto experience and other things. They rise up out of it and defeat the era that says they can't. And it's always done through the power and presence of God. So no one is with excuse, whatever your past might be or your present. You can rise up out of it. And if you see it as the Adam dream, it's a lot easier. Because that's what it's been. And even if you might have had a good experience, what about if you've had a really good experience in your past?
Then you need to ask the question, am I remembering God? Am I thanking him?
Someone has their computer on. We have an echo. Well, that's right. You have to, if that is true, then it, you must see its source has always been in God. No other source for good. Call no man good but the Father. You put it, if you know it came from God, then that's okay. But if you just think somehow you had a good life, chances are you were probably asleep. didn't realize it.
Or if you think that it was the result of some person.
Yeah.
You know, a father, a mother, a or a friend, or a brother, or a sister, then you're going to think that you can't live without them. And you're going to make a god out of them. And you'll damn both them and yourself.
That's why when you come into Christian Science, as we have in Plainfield, I mean, when you think of anything that's been good or wonderful for you in the past or the present, one feels gratitude to God.
Yes.
It becomes the natural thing to feel.
Yes, thank you. That keeps it all safe.
And, you know, another thing I've witnessed a lot is people think they have something really good. They spend so much time and effort defending it. And it causes them to stop doing good and being good because they're so consumed by defending this thing that they think is so good for them. It's been the source of a big downfall many times.
And I think if we have good, the thing is to ask God, what can I do for you with this good? How can I keep this moving on? What can I do for you? Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good point. When you give of your heart's rich overflow, then God gives you more good. Give more. It's like a stream, and you're in the stream. You give the good, and then God gives you more to give. When you stop giving, then you stop receiving the good.
Yeah, it'll dam the stream, the flow. It will dam it when you take it and just use it for your own selfish purposes. It has to be given back. And here again, this is why there's such great value here with all of you, with all that you do to give back, to help others. Because new people are finding us every day. And what we offer here must be of the expression of God. Expression of God. So,
As from my experience, I'm thinking as I listen to you guys, this is really helpful. I think one of the problems on the other end is when you try to make people's lives comfortable, thinking you're being a good Christian, and if you're doing it from the human mind, as we say, or in the Adam dream, you're setting yourself up as like a god and trying to make people comfortable and feel safe. I mean, it was very hard for me to understand. You keep hearing to give and be, you know, to be good and to love, but now I'm starting to see that unless you really do it through God, by your relationship, you could be perpetuating the Adam dream.
That's so important. That is so important. When you give, it's important to distinguish what people need from what they want.
Hmm.
When you give, it's important that you give from the standpoint of giving someone what they really, really need, and not necessarily what they want. And that's certainly true of your children, raising your children. You don't give them everything they want. You give them what they need. You let them grow and strengthen themselves by their own needs.
And I think, too, the main thing, someone is breathing heavily in their phone, so if you are a reflection of God, you will know what people need. If you are in that right state, that divine mind, you will know their needs. Even if it's not spoken, you will know, just as Jesus met the needs and Mrs. Eddy. You will know the needs. and it will be God-directed what you do. If you are in the human mind, and you're and I was definitely, oh my gosh, trying to be so good and kind and loving to everyone, and that if you're not in the right mind, that is called human do-goody. Human do-goody, damn. And you're not really doing it for the other person, you're doing it for yourself because you want to be so good and you want to be so kind and helping everybody. It's not God-directed. So before you help anyone, ask, Father, is this what you would have me do? And God will tell you. And sometimes you're moved to help someone you wouldn't think. And other times, maybe not. But God will direct it. And that's always the most important question to ask. Is this God-directed? And that's true in raising your children, too. In the lesson... Oh, go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this is was something I lived with my mother. She was always trying to do things for other people and thought that that was being a good person. And then when they didn't show the right kind of gratitude, she flipped out, made life miserable.
There you go. That's the indication. If you do something for someone and you flip out if they're not grateful, that shows it was human do-goody. When you're directed by God, you just do it like the sun shines, no strings attached. You just do it because you know it's God is the source of all good and you're just sharing it. And if they don't thank you, well, frankly, that is their problem and that it is a problem. But
and you wipe the dust off your feet and move on.
And you move on and keep that sun shining. Mrs. Eddy says in Signs and Health about love being love, whether needs any return or not. And that's how love is. It just shines forth. So, the human do-good, he does it with strings attached.
And that's not love.
No.
And that's the opposite of being unselfed, which is...
It is. It's a selfish human sense of love rather than the divine sense. And you work on this day by day, you know, your sense of love. Remember, in the definition and recapitulation of man, it says that you are the image of love. So I know I used to think, well, maybe, you know, I wasn't that loving. I needed to be more loving. I would work with that. Not that I had to try so hard to be loving, but that I was the image of love. Therefore, it was natural and right to be loving, because its source is in God. In the lesson in Science and Health, it says that man is the expression of God's being in the very first citation. You are not God, but you are God expressing himself in you. You're not God, but he expresses himself in you if you let him, if you get rid of your self qualities, your adamants of error, and keep your slate clean, he will shine through you. You are God's expression. Now, you can't say that if you're going around hating people and doing all kinds of things that you shouldn't. But it's something to know and to strive for and remembering. God is expressing himself. He's trying to express himself through you. He created you. He loves you. He created you for his purpose, not for your purpose. His purpose. And the more you know this, the more you will bless everyone around you, including your family. Because it's a truth that will shine and radiate in your home everywhere.
It's sort of putting people first, too, if you're trying to take care of them all the time. And I realize it's also like a lack of sense of true worth if you let people use you up and use you up.
Yes.
Right, and it's important to see other people as complete, as perfect,
good point.
As capable of having their own relationship with God. And certainly God is capable of caring for them. Sometimes they need a little boost, you know, briefly, but where are you boosting them to?
Right, to you or to God?
Not,
Another thing that's helpful is to set boundaries in your life and experience that other people don't cross, and it's out of respect for your own Christ.
Yeah, Mrs. Evans used to like to refer to the nursing thought. And the nursing thought was, you know, and not that nursing is at all bad. This is the, you know, the counterfeit of the right sense
of perversion of it.
Yeah, the perversion. But someone who just loves to be needed and likes to nurse and have someone dependent on them. And it takes two to tango. So you've got this one person who's just always worried and doing everything for someone else, and the other person who kind of is eating it up. Of course, that's a very unhealthy, dysfunctional relationship. It's not of God. And it needs to be depersonalized, healed, and have the right sense of the, certainly to be kind and loving to someone, but as Gary just said, not to be taken advantage of or to just do it to make your own self feel good. So there's the right sense and the wrong sense. Right sense is healing, and it's from God. Wrong sense is the Adam dream, and it's destructive.
And there's nothing in between.
Right. You're either in it or out of it.
Okay.
I don't think you're in some halfway place. You're not.
Okay.
Okay, any more on that?
I think on that, one of the classes here, Mrs. Evans made it clear about sympathy and empathizing. And how, you know, the difference with the sympathy, you're all in it with your pain and everything, you're both going down, whereas the other one actually sees
compassion. Compassion.
And give what's needed without, you know, really attaching the arrow to the person and then going down with it.
Thank you. Yes. The compassion just loves. Sympathy gets, right in with it.
Gets right in the mud and wallows around in the mud and stays there.
And it's not at all helpful. And you know, we've all looked for it or wanted to, you know, talk to a friend about your problem. You want them to sympathize. Sometimes the friend needs a big, smack in the head to wake them up. So be ready to do whatever is the kind thing to help them, truly help them. Now, think about it. If you are sick and you're having some kind of a problem, why do you want to feel better? What's your motive? It's something really important, okay?
Well,
I don't think anybody thinks about
so
it.
So I can enjoy my next vacation.
Exactly.
I mean, that truly is usually the reason. You just want to feel good. You don't want to feel bad. But why? I mean, this is very important to think about. I never thought about it. You know, you just want the pain to stop, or you want to feel better. And I know Florence probably knows this too. But in the practice, you know, you do have people that come and say, "Well, I'm sick, and I have to get that plane tomorrow. I have a vacation to go on, and I want to feel good." Or I have this 18 rounds of golf I have to play, and I want to feel better, okay? So you heal me real fast.
To get back to doing what God wants you to do?
Yes.
If I don't feel good, I'm useless, so I need to get back on track for doing what I'm supposed to do for whoever, for whatever God wants me to do.
Free you to live, life in capital letters.
Yes.
And to express the joy of the Lord, to be that expression.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Each time the trial, it brings you closer to God.
Yes. Yes. That's getting more meatier there.
And trials are proofs of God's care, and if everything's rosy, sometimes, you know, you just coast along, and the trials really force you to grow.
Yes. Yes. So you have to be willing to have that be the answer. Not that you just want this quick fix, but that you're willing to learn and to grow and get closer to God. It's an an avenue to get closer to God. If you embrace it that way, you will. You'll be healed. You'll realize you never were sick in the first place, and you'll get this closer sense of God. But that is a much... The motive is pure. And certainly what Dede said, too, to get so you can serve God. Now that, you know, we had it on the carousel recently about Carpenter. What would he do if he got sick in Mrs. Eddy's home? Oh, my gosh, that would be just terrible. What in the world would you do? And he just decided, you know, that he would just pray, not for himself, but for all mankind, and also to know it was an attack on his being able to work for Mrs. Eddy. So he impersonalized the whole thing, and he was healed. Now, all of you, I would say, and listening now, are getting to the point where if you are sick, it would be an attack on your work for God. For God. If you see it that way, and you say, Father, I've got your work to do today. I can't be sitting here, you know, blowing my nose all morning. But if it's to glorify him, you will find you'll be getting up out of that sick bed a lot quicker. Think about your motive. Why? Why? Always question your motives. Motives are hugely important. There are a couple things I wanted to read to you from Watches, Prayers, and Arguments. This is 157. The camp of a defeated enemy is always completely destroyed. We must destroy in our daily consciousness the motives and desires which feed mortal mind. Think about your motives. That's why we have the rule for motives and acts that you go over every day. Why do you want to bless somebody? Are you doing it to look good in front of men? Are you doing it because you feel honestly directed by God that there's a need there that you can help? Why do you want to feel better? What is your purpose? And then this, and what also Watches, Prayers, and Arguments 161. Mother explained this scripture, quote, you ask and receive not because ye ask amiss to consume it on your lust, end quote. We ask from a selfish motive, and she illustrated it in this way. If we have a pain, we ask to have it destroyed. Why? Because it makes us suffer. Is this the way? No. We should ask to have it removed because it dishonors the way that God has revealed, and this dishonors God. We ask to have the pleasures of sense destroyed. Why? Because they make us miserable. Is this the way? No. We should ask to have them destroyed because they dishonor the way and thus dishonor God. Then our prayer will be answered because we ask from an unselfish motive and with an honest purpose to honor and love the way that is God's idea. This is the great lesson that he has given to us. That if we would love him with all our heart and our neighbor as ourselves, thus keeping the whole law, we must have the spiritual sense of the way and love and honor his way or idea. The real individual that voices good, with a spiritual sense of this individual and not a material one, and do this by prayerful watching to see that in forsaking the material sense, we love more instead of less, and are ever reflecting this spiritual sense of love, which is all tenderness and compassion and loving kindness, and which is the way, the divine idea of love. So, this deals with your motive. Always checking your motive. If your motive is right, of course, God answers righteous prayer. You will find yourself so up and out of your sick bed or your depression or your financial difficulties or whatever it is. Keep your motive in accord with the Lord, with God. Have it a pure motive to serve him better. And believe me, my friends, you cannot BS the Lord. Don't say it if you don't mean it.
got to be really sincere because you'll be asked to prove it. The other thing that I have heard is, well, I want to get better so I can just prove to my family that Christian Science heals. Mm.
Cool.
Is what,
what's that all about?
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, it sounds sort of good, kind of. What's behind that?
Human will. Is that self-justification?
No. Yeah, yeah. Human will, yeah. Self-justification.
It's a very controlling influence.
It's all self.
It's all, isn't it a huge amount of pride? You want to show your family that, you know, you can demonstrate science? But you know, little things like that creep into people's thoughts, because I've heard it more than once. You know, I just want to prove to my family that, because maybe the family, none of them are Christian Scientists, that Christian Science heals. I want to prove it to them. Well, that's all backwards. For one thing, God does the healing. And you don't have to prove anything. It's already been proven time and time again. So, get some humility, and if you obey God the best you can, and you are truly living it, your family will be attracted to it. They can't help but be. And I see it with all of you. One by one, various members start getting interested and coming, or friends, or in other ways. But that's a backwards way to think, and it is all self, and it's also pride. So, but there you see, that would be a motive, a false motive, and then they can't understand. They think it's an unselfish motive. They can't understand why they're not healed. It's a bad motive.
Like that story in the Bible, Lazarus and Dives, when the man wanted to send somebody back from the dead so he could impress his brothers and stuff, the answer was, they have Moses and the prophets, let them hear them. If they don't believe them, they're still not going to believe, even though somebody comes back from the dead.
Yes. And always the humility to know, without God you can do nothing. And this is never about any person or about anyone proving anything or showing anybody anything. If you're on that trail, just stop. Stop it. Big sign, go back, wrong turn.
But it goes back to, you can't outline what God's plan is for anybody. People have to be ready for the truth. And the truth works. The truth works. But people have to be ready for it. And we never know where the person is going to come from that needs what we have to offer. I mean, you should be very receptive, very flexible as to where the person comes from that needs what you have to offer. It may not be a family member.
Yeah, very often it's not.
Right away.
You know, I mean, Jim Dibble, again, he's another example. He gave out another Science and Health. He just can't help it everywhere he turns. It's wonderful. And so, you know, I know with others of you, Fairley's always finding people who are interested in the truth. If you pray about it and you have it in your heart, you will find time. And that includes in your family. And it's not necessarily preaching it at all. It should not be preaching it. It's just letting them feel the love of God, which is what attracts. So,
I think it's important that I've learned to include in my prayers that the world is opening to Christian Science.
Yes.
The world, it's not some far off, way distant thing.
That's right. They're already, I mean, we should see it already here, because it is already here. It is already here. We should never see our neighbor as someone lacking in anything, but is already a scientist, because they are. It's deep within everyone. We see that if we see it, we will experience it, we will have it, and we will bring in the millennium. You know, John saw it, John saw it in the Revelation, saw the new Jerusalem while still here on this earth. It was all within him, what he saw. It's all within you, what you see. So make sure we are seeing it correctly.
Jesus promised it. He promised the Comforter, the Spirit of Truth. And God revealed it to Mrs. Eddy because the world was ready then.
And watch as prayers and arguments, Mrs. Eddy said, to know the world is ready for Christian Science.
Right.
To work daily with that.
To work daily with that. Yes, she did. And so we do. And remember, as in Jesus, these three statements of Jesus to work with all the time, all the time. I and my Father are one. The Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the work. And the Father hath not left me alone. Powerful statements of Christ Jesus. To be always thinking about. You are at one with the Father. That McNeil Young's article, Oneness, is wonderful about that. He's not really something you're praying to far away. He is your thought, your mind, your life, your truth. He's everything. Your oneness with him. And then two, you can't do anything. This is in this week's lesson two. I can of mine own self do nothing. The Father that doeth the works. You can never do it. Don't be whining that you can't do something. I always say, that's right, you can't. Of course you can't. Only God does. And only as far as you are his reflection can you. And then the final, you are never alone. Never. Work with those. So, in Science and Health, this statement, truth, life, and love are a law of annihilation to everything and life themselves because they declare nothing except God. How do we operate that truth? What does that mean to anyone? Well,
you're replacing the false statements with the truth?
Yes. If you are living this truth, life, truth, and love, it's just what we were talking about, if you are at one with God,
As best you can,
it will annihilate everything unlike itself. It can't even come near you. It goes along, really, with the 91st Psalm. It's a total protection. You've got to be living it, though. You've got to be doing it. You've got to have, you have to, truth, you have to be honest. Love, you have to be loving. Life, you have to, knowing God is your life. When you're knowing this to the best of your ability, error can't come near you. You won't be having these weird experiences. They'll get annihilated. So, take these statements of truth, work with them, digest them, make them yours, prove them to be true. Anything that I say, I haven't proven it myself or I couldn't say it. And of course, there's always more proving to be done. But digest it, make it yours, you become it, and you will replace the old man for the new. Okay, I'm going to close with Pulpit and Press, page 3. Know then that you possess sovereign power to think and act rightly, and that nothing can dispossess you of this heritage and trespass on love. If you maintain this position, who or what can cause you to sin or suffer? Our surety is in our confidence that we are indeed dwellers in truth and love, man's eternal mansion. Such a heavenly assurance ends all warfare and bids tumult cease. For the good fight we have waged is over, and divine love gives us the true sense
a victory. So, thank you all, and we will know that we have a God that heals, and we can be proving it in our lives day by day. And we'll go forward now, and we'll have a powerful service.
Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all.